You are listening to the weekly podcast of Journey Christian Church, located on 441 1 Mile North of Maitland Boulevard, 1965 South Orange Blossom Trail in Apopka, Florida. Our website, journeychristian.com. This weekend, we start out our new series called Relationships That Define Us. This weekend, our guest speakers are Alan and Lisa Robertson, stars from the popular reality TV show Duck Dynasty. Alan and Lisa have an incredible comeback story to their marriage and what Christ can truly do when we put Him in the center of our lives. Today's message is entitled Relationships That Define Us, Marriage.
Anybody in here love the Lord Jesus Christ? Let's give Him a little hand applause. There we go. Man, it's exciting for Lisa and I to be here with you guys. I know when you're looking at me, the first thing you think of is Duck Dynasty. Not really, right? That's what someone told me today at the hotel when we were leaving. We were talking. He asked me what we did, and eventually I said, well, I was on a television show. And he was like, oh, which one? I said, Duck Dynasty. And he looked at me, and he was like, really? You were on that show? He said, are you like a manager, or what were you? The oldest beardless brother. That's who I am. How many of you, have ever watched Duck Dynasty? A few of you have? Excellent. Well, I know I'm among friends then. That's good. A lot of people, you know, have talked about our show for a long time. And so, you know, when the show first came out, it kind of caught everybody by surprise. No more so than us, because we were shocked. You know, Dad famously said, this will never work. People won't watch the show. Why would they care to, right? It's bearded rednecks running around in North Louisiana. Who would care about that? Obviously, some people did, right? So they began to describe the show, and as any show, you began to talk about it sort of like you connect it with something else. And so they said, well, it's kind of like Andy Griffith, which I thought was good, meets the Waltons, family show, also good, and meets Dukes of Hazzard. And I was like, all right, I could see that. You know, there's some crazy hijinks. I compare our show to the Munsters. Do you remember the Munsters? A great show from the 60s, right? Everybody loves it. It's a family of monsters. They're kind and gentle, but they're still monsters. And they had this beautiful cousin that came to live with them. Does anybody remember her name? Three or four of you remember Marilyn Munster. See, that's the problem. When you're beautiful in a world of monsters, people don't remember who you are. I can completely relate to Marilyn Munster. I can. So everybody's like, oh, beardless bro, you know, who is this guy? I get it. So there's a lot of reasons why our show was successful. It was funny. I mean, we're all pretty quick-witted, and we like to, as we say, throw each other under the bus. So, you know, we've got that going for us. But there was also another element to our show. There was a faith element that we weren't making a religious show. We weren't going to make the redneck PTL or the redneck, you know, show like that. Instead, it was a prayer at the end of each episode that really began to impact people in America. It was people that loved the Lord and felt like that television had left them a long time ago, because everything seemed to be so warped and twisted and trying to put out agendas that were terrible. And so our family came along. It was just like, wait a minute. This is a fairly normal family that seems to be functioning quite well, that loves the Lord and loves each other. And at the end of the day, we find a reason why we remind each other of that. So we believe that's why our show was successful. It was the prayer heard around the world is what I call it. Now, out of that, our family was able to have a great run. We just ended, after 5 years, 130 episodes, we ended our run just this past month. And what a run it was. I mean, that last time we were all together, we were filming our clip show, and we were looking back over the course of our time together. And it was a bittersweet moment, because we know how much people love the show and how much they're going to miss it. And we're going to miss doing it. Mom and I both said we'll never spend as much time together as a family as we did making this television show. I believe because of the opportunities that God is continuing to give us, we're probably not done with it. I mean, we're probably going to see us in some different ways. But God has done amazing things through one family who trusted Him. But it wasn't always great, I have to tell you that. So this series that begins now, Relationships That Define Us, is on marriage. And marriage is a big part of our story, mine and Lisa's story. It's also a big part of our family story on Duck Dynasty. Our episode, Till Duck Do Us Part, which was my debut onto the show, I got to be the pastor who did the vow renewal for my own parents, which was a wonderful experience. Also, there were 12 million homes that tuned in that night to watch this episode. And I say it's because they were welcoming Beardless Bro into the Duck Dynasty universe. I told Willie, I said, if you'd have got me on this show in year one, there's no telling where we could have taken this thing, right? But this show was very special, not just to the audience, but also to our family. And if you ever watch it again, you look at the tears that are in everybody's eyes. And that's because this was a journey that got us to this moment that we celebrated on the show. And to many, it's still their favorite episode. It's certainly mine and Lisa's favorite. My parents are, of course, the focal point of our dynasty and our family, because without them, none of us would be here. My mom first met my dad in high school. She was 14 years old, and he was 16 years old, and they became high school sweethearts. Now, the relationship really took off when her dad died suddenly from a massive heart attack at 49 years old. Her mom, who was much younger, depended on him for everything, and so she completely fell apart. And she basically left the home. She began to date men, she began to drink, and just start a whole lifestyle that she had never done before. And so my mom was basically just left there. And so my dad became really an important part of her life, and so the Robertson family sort of brought her in. And unfortunately for my folks, like a lot of teenagers who have too much time without any supervision, when she was 16 years old, she found out she was pregnant with yours truly. And Dad, of course, was 18. He had just signed a scholarship to play football at Louisiana Tech University, which he would go on to do. And now Mom is not even going to be able to finish her high school senior year because she's pregnant with me in 1964. My mom made a decision, though, and I sure am glad she did. She chose life. If she wouldn't have, I wouldn't be here speaking to you today. So every day I'm grateful that my mom decided that my life was worth living. And so they decided to start their lives together at Louisiana Tech. And it was tough, as it would be for, at that age. You can imagine. I mean, she just turned 17 when I was born. Dad's playing football. He's very successful. But he also began, like a lot of kids did at any time in college, but especially in the late 60s, to chart a course away from his family. He began to drink, and as he calls it, carouse, and he became quite the heathen, in his words. By 1969, my brother Jace came along, and so Mom was pregnant with Willie in 1971, and we were a struggling family. My mom was getting depressed more every single day. Dad was not there to help. He quit his teaching job. He was going to be a teacher and a coach to run a bar on the Arkansas-Louisiana state line. And so there we were, living behind this bar, me, a little 7-year-old kid, seeing stuff you should never see, camped out behind that bar. My mom would cry most nights. That's how her nights went in, and we would hear it. So we knew we were in big trouble. One night, I don't know what it was, Mom was crying, as she did many times, and so Jason and I went up to the door, and he was just a little bitty tot. And I knocked on the door, and she stopped crying. And I said, Mom, the devil is going to leave our dad one day. Now, I don't know where that came from other than the Holy Spirit. I was 7 years old. I don't remember it, but she tells me that's what I said. As a pastor now, 22 years I was a pastor, I realized that was my first sermon standing at that bathroom door. And because Mom realized in that moment that she couldn't keep living in this self-pity party, but that she had to do what she had to do to follow Jesus and raise us upright, I had a response to that very first sermon that night. If I'd only known to pass a contribution tray under the door, I could have run the trifecta. I wouldn't learn about that till much later. But my mom then said she realized that what her grandmother told her was true. She was going to have to be ironclad for Christ, and she was going to have to fight for everything. Now, you'd think that would help our family situation, but it actually made it worse at first, because now Dad, who already was living this heathen lifestyle, he now began to put that guilt on her. Oh, well, Miss Goody Two-Shoes, I guess you got it all figured out now. Why don't you go down with your church friends? And, you know, then we began to hear that daily, until finally the tension got so tight, our family blew apart. Dad kicked us out one night. We were crimping his lifestyle. So Mom loads up her three boys with nothing in the car but three boys in pajamas, and we take off to West Monroe, which was about an hour away. The church there, the White Spray Road Church, that later I would pastor for 22 years, was the church that took us in. A church not unlike this one that loves people and said, you know what, we're going to help you get started. all the years I was there, I had so many little broken families come in, and I remembered what it was like to be a 7 or 8 year old kid in that situation and to be scared. And so they took us in and they helped us get an apartment. They helped us get some food and helped us get set up. And we had nothing, but we had Christ and we had a church family. And then finally, my dad, a few months later, decided, you know what? I miss my family. And so that drove him to come down to West Monroe and find out what Jesus was all about. And when he became a Christian, I mean, the whole family, it turned around fast. He went from being the biggest heathen you ever saw to John the Baptist seemingly overnight. I mean, he was just one of those kind of guys that impacted so many people. And so when you look back and you think about that struggling little family, and then you fast forward it to this family that's able to impact millions of people. And I tell you what, because of the show and because of our faith, we have been able to lead thousands of people to Christ. That happens by the power of God Almighty. You have to give him praise and glory for that. Well, you know, for me personally, this should have been the golden hour, right? We're church now, we're back together as a family. But you know, Satan, it's the way he works a lot of times. When he's had his crosshairs on one or two people in a family, and then all of a sudden those people give in to Christ, a lot of times he puts his crosshairs on the next weakest link. And in our family, that was yours truly. Because when I got to be a teenager, all of a sudden I began thinking dark thoughts. And while we were singing wonderful praise songs in our church, I was down there on the third row as a double secret agent. I knew all the words. I was singing them out. I looked like I had it going on. All the little ladies said, oh, Ad Al, he's a good boy. He's good. But I wasn't good. I was getting darker by the day. And my life began to spiral out of control. And it's hard to keep that double secret agent because sooner or later, you got to choose a side. And so in our case, I got confronted by my dad because my lifestyle had spun so out of control that people are now coming to them saying, Al's in trouble. So dad set me down in a truck and he said, Al, you got two choices, son. You can change or you can leave. I just graduated high school. I was 17 years old. I thought I knew everything, apparently. And so I thought, I was appalled by his telling me I had to leave after his past. Now, I didn't tell him that. I kept that to myself, but I was appalled inside. And unfortunately, during this period of time, when I was facing now a decision of change or leave, I was dating a girl that had loved me since an early age and stalked me since middle school. And instead of leading her to something better, I led her to something worse. It was a terrible, terrible example. It's one of the greatest regrets of my entire life. She's here today. So I'll let her tell you a little bit about our story from this point.
Hey, Journey Church. Thank y'all for having us. We're so excited to be here. I am the girl that has loved this fella since I was in the sixth grade. The first time I saw him, I thought he was going to be my knight in shining armor. You know, just that prince that comes in. See, whenever I was a little girl, I had two siblings. I had an older brother and an older sister. My brother was 12 years older than me, and my sister was 7 years older than me. But I'm sad to say that they're both deceased now. They both had drug and alcohol problems. And so my sister died at 49, and my brother died when he was 56. And my dad died just a couple of years before that. So our family has really had a lot of heartache. But whenever I was in the first grade, probably about 7 years old is my earliest memory, I had an uncle that also had a drug and alcohol problem. And he started to do things to me that I knew were not right, but I'm only seven, so you don't really know what's happening. You just know that nobody else does that. And so, of course, he told me that, you know, I would be in trouble if I told because they would be mad at me, not him. As I grew up, as I got older, I knew that wasn't the case because I knew that if my dad ever found out, that he would kill him. Then I had the responsibility to not tell then because I didn't want anything to happen to my dad. So I kept that inside. When I'm in the sixth grade, this boy comes to my school, and he is the, you know, here's the words we always used when we were growing up. It'll also tell you how old I am. He was so fine. And he really was. He was very popular. All the girls wanted him. I used to follow him around. He's right. I stalked him. I would follow him through the recess bells, at lunch, I mean, everything. Because I just thought, see, he knows nothing about me, and he can be the one to take me away from all of it. I only had one problem. See, he was Mr. Pinecrest, and that was the highest title that you could get at our little country school. And he didn't know me from Eve. I mean, he really didn't. He never noticed me at all. Of course, I'm in the sixth grade, and I have a mouth full of braces. I'm probably wearing glasses whenever he saw me the first time. So who would want to, you know, look at that girl? But anyway, he left school that year, after that year, and we did not meet up again until I'm in the 10th grade and he's in the 12th grade. And so I don't know how you guys date here in Orlando or wherever you're from, because a lot of you may be transplants, but we would go to McDonald's and we would go around and around and around McDonald's parking lot. Because you never knew when somebody new might come in while you were making the round. And that was true. Because when I made about my third round, I see this guy and my cousin. I'm thinking, this is my inn. I mean, this is my cousin here. So anyway, I pull up and I'm talking to my cousin. And he comes to the door. And he looks in and he's like, whoa, why haven't we ever went out? Well, I don't know. I think it takes somebody has to ask you, right? So he says, how about we go out next weekend? And I'm like, okay, let's do it. Of course, my heart has stopped because I'm just like, he asked me out. So that's all I could think of. The next week at school, I have no idea what happened. But come Friday night, I get a phone call, and he's going to meet me at McDonald's. All right, now this is strike number one. So I get to McDonald's, I pull in, and he's there with not just that one cousin, but two of them. And I'm thinking, how is this going to work? Because, I mean, I thought we were going out on a date. Anyway, so I get in the car with him in the back seat. My cousins are in the front. I'm still thinking, great, this is my first date, and look at this. But anyway, at this point, they start drinking and smoking pot. And by the time we get to the place that they're going, which I had no idea where we were going, which was a strip club, he's passed out in the back seat, and my cousins get out and go into the strip club. So I'm like, okay. Maybe I need to focus on date number two because it's got to go up from here, right? No. Didn't happen. I think it was about the third date whenever I lost my virginity to my handsome prince. And we dated for about 6 months, and like he told you, he was living that secret life, and his dad said, you got to go. And so he had to go and find himself in New Orleans, Louisiana. You're going to find something, right? So anyway, he broke my heart. So I go to visit him in New Orleans. And he doesn't even come to the house where we're going. I'm with his parents and his grandparents, his brothers, and he doesn't show up. He's out on a date with somebody else. So again, I cried all the way home and for about 2 weeks after that. And that sent me into a total tailspin because I had lost the love of my life, the man that I thought was going to be my Prince Charming and take me away from this life. So I turned to other guys for 2.5 years. I dated anybody I could. If they had a girlfriend, I still dated them, got in lots of fights with girlfriends. Slept around, drank, drugs, still trying to find that one thing that I could not find. So I was dating one of my best friend's cousins, and we had been dating about 9 months, and I find out that I'm pregnant. I'm 16 years old. That's not something that a 16-year-old wants to find out. And so, you know, the life that I'm living, I really have no one to talk to because I don't have a church youth group. I mean, my life was spinning so out of control that on Sunday morning, I'm recovering from the weekend. So I had no one. So I had to talk to my parents. And so I went in and I told them. My mother already knew because I'd been throwing up every morning. I didn't realize that was a sign. So my parents believed the lie. They believed that what was growing inside of me was a glob of tissue. That until you give birth to that, it's not a child. And so my mother tells me, the only thing that I know for you to do is to have an abortion. And I'm at 16, and I'm thinking, that's probably exactly what I need to do. Because you see, if my Prince Charming comes back and finds out that I've had a baby by somebody else, you know, that's not going to look good. I mean, it was all I could think of. I never thought of the life that was living inside of me. So I go to an abortion clinic. And if you've never been there, it's one of the coldest and darkest and unfriendly places that you ever want to go. I think they have to be that way to do what they're doing. And so I go through with this abortion. And they tell me, in a couple of days, you'll be good as new. You can go on and live your life and never think about this again. I don't think there's been one day in the last 36 years that I have not thought of what I did that particular day. Now, I do want you to know that I serve a God that can heal our hearts. And that is exactly what he's done for me for the last 36 years. But it is a regret that I will always live with. The guy that I was dating, I couldn't date anymore. Because every time I looked at him, he reminded me of what I'd done. So I decided to date a guy that lived down the street from me. And he was a really nice guy. And I said, you know what? I'm not drinking, I'm not doing drugs, and I'm not having sex. I cannot take that chance again. And so he was really good to me. And so we talked about getting married. And so my phone rings one day. And again, young people, let me just tell you, whenever I was a teenager, we had to answer the phone to know who was on the other line. Not only that, I lived in the country, so we had a party line. You had to listen for the ring because you didn't want to get Miss Gordy's call down there because you're going to get fussed at if you did. And so it was our ring, And I answer it and I say, hello. And he said, hey, it's me. And I if I hadn't have been sitting down, I would have fell. It was my Prince Charming. And I said, hey. He said, I'm back. I said, yeah, I know. I've heard. And he said, well, I've heard that you've been dating someone very seriously. And I said, I have. We've talked about getting married as soon as I graduate. And he said, you want to go out on Friday? And I said, absolutely.
So I knew I still had it. But actually, I had had it and lost it and found it again. I was in New Orleans and got into a spiral of my own, much similar to Lisa's. And so during that period of time, both of us picked up even more what we call baggage that we would eventually bring into our relationship. When I was in New Orleans, the last day I was there, I got beat up by a jealous husband with a crowbar, which will tend to make you think about where your life station is. And that day I decided that if I stayed here, I would die and I would go to hell. And so I got scared. And the only place you can go when you're scared is home. And that's what I did. I worked out a speech. When I got back, I would, you don't have to expect me as a son. Just, I want to work here and I want to prove myself. And much like that son did in Luke 15, that prodigal, I'd worked out the speech. And when I got there, would you believe it? I couldn't even get any words out because my parents came out to meet me just like that father did in Luke 15. And they didn't give me a long list of rules. They didn't remind me all the things I did wrong. They just loved me. And they said, welcome home, son. Dad said, we got duck calls to bail out. Let's go. That was it. And that night we killed the fattened catfish and had a celebration because a lost son had come home. And it started my life anew. And so then now as a Christian, as a true Christian, the son of God, Dad sat down and shared with me the beautiful gospel story. I went down there on that riverbank, the same one on the show, and he baptized me into Christ. And my life changed. And that's when I made that faithful call. We had a second first date that was a real first date. I went to her house. Her parents were not happy, which is understandable. I had broken their girl's heart. But eventually, I would work my way into their hearts as well. I decided after a few months that, I was ready to spend the rest of my life with this woman. And we decided no sex this time, no drinking, no drugging, because now we were beginning anew. Unfortunately, Lisa really still had me as that prince and the Lord. Not the Lord. And again, we took that into our marriage as well. I asked her on November 2nd, 1984, if she would marry me on November 9th, 1984. 1 week. And she said, why so fast? I said, well, because, if you decide to spend the rest of your life with someone, you want the rest of your life to begin as soon as possible, right? And next week sounds good. Not so good with the parents again. Bad call. More trouble. Everybody thought she was pregnant as well because it was a one-week wedding, but she wasn't. But we began our life together. But without Jesus being the Lord of Lisa's life, we struggled so much those first 15 years. It was a struggle. And at that 15-year point, we broke, just like my family had broken. Lisa had an affair. I was the pastor of our church. So you can imagine what a fishbowl situation that was. And our fishbowl exploded. And so we were faced now with the biggest crisis of our lives. Where do we go from here? By God's grace, we chose to forgive one another for everything we had done to each other. And we decided to begin anew, this time with Christ being not only my Lord, but her Lord. I got kicked off the throne, which should have happened long before, and Jesus got put in his proper place. And from that point to this day, as we sit on this stage talking to you, Christ has led us. And we can now say, and it took us a few years to be able to say this, that we would go through everything we went through again if we could get to this point that we've had for the last 18 years. When we look at our family now, two of our grandkids are here with us on this trip. We have two daughters. We have five grandchildren, one on the way. And we think about what would have happened if we would have walked away at that point, the blessings we would have missed because we couldn't see around that mountain that was in between us. But we did, by the grace of God. And we were blessed with a great family. We you get a chance to travel around and speak all over the country now, doing just what we're doing with you guys, talking about what Christ has done in our lives. We put our story in a book, and we called it A New Season, because we realized that every life, every marriage has seasons in it. And some seasons are bad, and some are great, and some are two-year-olds, which is somewhere in between, right? But every marriage goes through seasons. And we're in a blessed and new season in our lives because Christ is in control. And so we think about all the opportunities that God has given this couple standing before you today, 32 years into our marriage, as we encourage you, as this series begins about relationships that define you. Your marriage is so important. God designed it to be one man, one woman for life. And we know we sin and we fall short of that goal. But if some of you here or some of you watching are struggling, you're thinking, I don't know that I can go one more day. I just want to encourage you to go one more day. Give God a chance. A great counselor helped guide Lisa and I through some of the toughest times of our life and relationship. Find someone here at this church that can guide you to someone like that to get healing, to unpack bags, and to be changed and to be different. And if you've never become a Christian, then that's the first step towards the proper healing in a marriage that's floundering. Sometimes maybe it's just a rededication of putting Christ where he needs to be. We're so great to have the opportunity to be here today with you. Would you all stand while we close with a prayer? Father, I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to be here at Journey, to be able to share a message of grace and reconciliation and hope. Father, you know that I made a vow to you, and then I made a vow to Lisa that when I offered her forgiveness for the brokenness in our heart and our life, when I made that vow that I promised you and I promised her I would never use her sin or my sin against us ever again. I'm not a perfect man, and I've fallen far short of your grace, but that one vow I have held because I don't want our past sin to harm us in our future. I thank you for Jesus Christ and the hope that he offers, the grace that he gives us. And I'm so grateful that we have been made whole again, that the blessings we have now in our grandchildren and continuing generations, we were to look back and say, thank you, Mam and Pap, Mom and Dad, for sticking it out and for staying together. I give you all the praise and credit and glory for that. And I do it in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this message, Relationships That Define Us, Marriage, with guest speakers Alan and Lisa Robertson. For service times and more information about Journey Christian Church, please log on to our website anytime at journeychristian.com or call 407-88-GRACE. That's 407-884-7223.